what's really disturbing here is that the news media is passing on the information from these industry-funded groups as if it's the gospel truth. And these groups actually call themselves the Sound Science Movement. Extremely well-funded. They get money from all the worst polluters and also from the big right-wing foundations.
From the studios of Freak Radio, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Thursday, February 1st, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this half-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, we'll hear from John Stauber, co-author of the new book, Trust Us, We're Experts, How Industry Manipulates Science and Gambles on Your Future. And later in the show, we'll be speaking with Cecil Prescott of the Micro Radio Implementation Project. Plus, this week's Spotlight Sound. Stand by for the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next. And now, headlines for the week ending Thursday, February 1st, 2001. The World Economic Forum opened in Davos, Switzerland on Thursday, January 25th, and Swiss authorities cracked down on protests. Hundreds of demonstrators were stopped at Langquart, about 25 miles from Davos, where they blocked a major rail line. Demonstrators said that despite the protest ban and heavy snowfall, they were determined to deliver their message against spreading globalization to the corporate bosses and other financial leaders meeting in Davos. Elsewhere in Switzerland, a group of some 200 protesters urinated and spray-painted slogans on the walls of the Geneva-based World Trade Organization, but did not manage to break into the building. Police fired water cannons, tear gas, and rubber pellets Saturday at activists protesting a meeting of world economic leaders, and angry protesters turned back from Davos, rioted in Zurich, burning cars and smashing windows. As evening fell, some 400 demonstrators were sent back to Zurich on a special train from Langquart, rioted, broke windows, burned cars, and overturned trash containers. Police fired water cannons and rubber pellets. Vandana Shiva, environmental and human rights activist from India, who attempted to climb over a police barrier, was grabbed and beaten with a police baton. At least 70 people had been arrested Saturday night in Zurich. For more info on the protests, please visit the Swiss Independent Media Center at www.switzerland.indymedia.org. Seven members of United Students Against Sweatshops were arrested at Chicago's Nike Town store on Saturday, January 27th, after dropping several hundred small flyers and unfurling a banner inside the store which read, "Kukdong workers demand justice. Do it, Nike." Outside, about 50 demonstrators marched and chanted. Workers at the Korean-owned Kukdong factory in Puebla, Mexico, make Nike brand sweatshirts for universities across the United States. On January 9th, Kukdong workers went on strike to protest the firing of five workers who led demonstrations at the factory in support of better working conditions and recognition of their democratic, independent union. Kukdong factory employees charge the company unlawfully employs children, physically assaults workers, locking them inside factory gates, and denies workers benefits, sick leave, and decent pay. Nike representatives deny the claims. Workers occupied an outdoor patio on the factory grounds until January 11th, when the governor of Puebla ordered several hundred riot police to enter the compound and break the strike. When workers saw the police coming, they threw their hands in the air and retreated. Yet many were hit, pulled, pushed, and insulted by police. At least 15 workers were hospitalized. Tensions are high at the factory, as only a third of the workers have been rehired. The seven arrested at Saturday's protest spent about 12 hours in jail before being released and will be arraigned March 16th on charges of disorderly conduct. Seven people were wounded on Monday, January 29th, when U.S. and British warplanes bombed residential and service installations in southern Iraq. The official Iraqi news agency reported planes attacked civilian targets in 6 provinces. A spokesperson for the U.S. Central Command in Tampa, Florida, said American and British planes struck southern Iraq on Sunday, not Monday, and denied that civilians were targeted. U.S. forces have stepped up attacks, conducting 5 military strikes in northern and southern Iraq in recent weeks, a significant increase in a region that had been relatively quiet for about 6 weeks. On Monday, January 29th, Danish riot police arrested 41 Greenpeace activists who chained themselves to a bulk carrier Explorer, which had arrived from Argentina carrying 20,000 tons of genetically engineered animal feed grains. The activists prevented the ship from unloading its cargo at the port of Aarhus in Denmark for more than 44 hours until the ship was raided by Danish riot police in the pre-dawn hours. Currently, the European Union has no regulation to label genetically modified animal feed or meat and dairy products derived from animals fed on GE feed. A draft novel feed regulation requiring labeling of GE feed will be proposed by the European Union Commission in the coming months, but its approval and enforcement is expected to take 2 more years. A ban on feeding meat and bone meal to livestock was recently imposed due to fears over mad cow disease. Mad cow disease is spread by feeding healthy cattle meat and bone meal made from cows that carried the disease undetected and has been linked to a fatal brain disease in humans. Without human intervention, cattle are naturally vegetarian. Nations exporting non-genetically modified foods have benefited so far, but will be hard-pressed to meet the expected surge in European demand for soya and corn following the European Union's meat and bone meal ban, and pure food advocates fear that European imports of bioengineered feed will be on the rise. And finally, the Justice Department decided on Wednesday, January 31st, not to pursue federal charges against the 4 officers of the NYPD Street Crimes Unit who shot and killed unarmed African immigrant Amadou Diallo in the doorway of his apartment almost 2 years ago. Diallo was hit 19 times in a barrage of 41 bullets. The officers claim he was holding a gun, but it later turned out to be his wallet. The Diallo family's $80 million civil suit against the NYPD will now proceed. The officers were acquitted of all criminal charges about a year ago, after their trial was moved to Albany in upstate New York. The acquittals set off a wave of protest around the nation. A broader Justice Department investigation into the tactics and programs of the Street Crimes Unit is ongoing. And those were headlines for the week ending February 1st, 2001. John Stauber writes investigative exposés on propaganda as it is perpetrated in our society. He has authored many books, including Mad Cow USA and Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Public Relations Industry. His newest book, Trust Us, We're Experts, How Industry Manipulates Science and Gambles on Your Future, was co-authored with Sheldon Rampton, and is about the so-called experts used by the media to confuse us on very critical environmental health and safety issues. John Stauber recently came to Santa Cruz to promote his new book and was recorded by Freak Radio's C-Line. John Stauber.
I was here 5 years ago when Sheldon Rampton and I wrote our first book together, Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies, in the Public Relations Industry. And people who are familiar with that book or familiar with our work know that we write investigative exposés on propaganda as it's perpetrated and functions in our society. And we like to believe, of course, here in the United States that we're a democratic society and we're all well-educated and cynical people and, you know, much too smart and wary to be fooled by propaganda. And anyway, we don't have propaganda in this society. Propaganda was back in Nazi Germany or Stalinist Russia. But of course, the reality is, Alex Carey, the Australian academic, makes so clear in his book, Taking the Risk Out of Democracy, is that we're the most propagandized people in history in the world, because the type of propaganda that we're exposed to is commercial advertising and especially public relations. The best propaganda is invisible, and the best public relations is invisible. And there's a huge multi-billion dollar industry made up of companies that most of us have never heard of, like Ketchum and Edelman and Burson Marsteller, owned by bigger advertising companies that are constantly merging. And these companies are very expert at propaganda. And our new book, Trust Us, We're Experts, is really about two types of experts. It's about the experts in propaganda and the experts that they succeed in pushing forward, especially through the media, who gain our trust and who confuse us on very critical environmental and health and safety issues, everything from pesticides to global warming to mad cow disease, whatever the issues and crises are that they're managing on behalf of their usually corporate clients. The new book really began as an examination of the issues around junk science versus sound science, because as we were writing our quarterly PR watch, we realized that there are all sorts of really nice sounding front groups, organizations that we're supposed to trust, organizations with impressive advisory boards of university scientists and medical doctors, organizations like the American Council on Science and Health and the Advancement of Sound Science Coalition, with multi-million dollar budgets and very professional staffs trained in public relations, trained in lobbying, legal staffs, and that these organizations have very effectively over the last 20 years succeeded in planting the term junk science in the news media. And if you do, as Ed Herman did, or as we did in researching this book, a search of that term, junk science, to see how it's used in the news media, you'll sort of see the John Stossel effect, that the term junk science almost always refers to public health concerns, environmental concerns, concerns of workers over safety issues, and issues like dioxin contamination, no problem, asbestos, a scam, you know, ALR, a shame, should have never been banned, global warming, not occurring. And then actually, as the global climate change issue became really difficult to say it's not happening, they've changed the tune to, okay, it's happening, but it's good for us, literally. What's really disturbing here is that the news media is passing on the information from these industry-funded groups as if it's the gospel truth. And these groups actually call themselves the sound science movement. They're extremely well-funded. They get money from all the worst polluters and also from the big right-wing foundations like SCAFE and Mellon that fund their brethren at the Heritage Institute. And they include some of the leading Washington, D.C. think tanks on the right, like the Cato Institute and the Competitive Enterprise Institute. In fact, while we were researching one of these organizations, the Advancement of Sound Science Coalition, which started up in 1993 and was sort of put on the shelf around 96, 97, we were astounded to find in the millions of pages of internal tobacco documents now available on the website that this organization was actually begun wholly by the Philip Morris Tobacco Company. And that sort of says it all about the sound science movement. When the tobacco industry, an industry that arguably has done more to degrade science and scientific research and confuse and misinform the public on a critical health issue and frankly kill more people with its product than any other single industry outside of the military, When that industry succeeds in defining junk science in our media, we're in sad straits, and that's what's happened. So the book, you know, there's a chapter in the book, The Junkyard Dogs, that is about all that, and those issues are through the book. But we also realized early on that there was a whole history here that was hidden from us and is hidden from all of us, about industry's cover-ups of issues going back to lead and asbestos very early on.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, you're tuned to the Weekly Freak Show. Please stand by for contact information at the end of this half-hour broadcast. That was the band Omobna with this week's Spotlight Sound, M-E-D-I-A, from the 1999 Zapatista Benefit compilation CD, Freedom is Forbidden. The Federal Communications Commission received over 500 applications for low-power FM construction permits between January 16th and 22nd, 2001, despite a recent bill passed by Congress which limits the FCC's ability to issue these licenses. This was the third such filing windows for LPFM. The Micro Radio Implementation Project is a national initiative to help organizations navigate the sometimes tricky application project. While a thriving pirate radio movement has brought this issue to the national forefront, many thousands of people are interested in starting their own community radio stations. I spoke with Cecil Prescott of the Micro Radio Implementation Project, and while we do not agree on tactics and strategy, we share a common interest in a more democratic media structure.
Implementation Project is a national initiative to help organizations and nonprofit groups to apply for FCC's licenses for low-power FM. As you're probably familiar with, the FCC passed a regulation last year which would permit nonprofit groups to establish low-power FM radio stations. And so what we offer in terms of technical assistance, in terms of filling out applications, outreach to groups and community, and occasionally some advocacy, but mostly we're here to assist groups to through the process of applying to help ensure a greater diversity on the airwaves. We were established about a year and a half ago, initially through the United Church of Christ Office of Communication. The Office of Communications of the United Church of Christ has been an advocate in opening up or democratizing the airwaves for several decades, and so this was seen as a natural, next natural step in terms of advocacy, in terms of media. Right now, we've the FCC has gone through three cycles of applicants, and we've helped with partners, organizations across the United States help groups apply for these licensees.
I'm looking at your mission statement, and it seems that you guys are fairly... It just appears to me that a lot of the advocacy work that you do is on behalf of faith-based organizations, for lack of a better term.
Oh, that's becoming popular these days.
Yes, it is, with our new president. But that's what it says right here, faith groups, and that's the first thing
right.
You list.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just curious, because I feel, you know, I speak for the thousands and thousands of people who have come on the air illegally,
mm-hmm.
To bring this issue forward and put it in, you know, in the FCC's plate, so to speak. And it just seems like a lot of people have come out of nowhere almost and have, you know, embraced low-power FM as their own.
Sure. One of the difficulties, as I said, United Church of Christ has been involved in media concerns for many years in terms of opening up the airway. So in terms of United Church of Christ, in terms of in the 60s, in terms of challenging some licenses, you know, in terms of accessibility, in terms of civil rights and stuff, certainly has been involved in media advocacy for decades, and certainly we recognize that and acknowledge the work of people such as yourself who've been involved in pirate radio to sort of like move the agenda forward. And certainly while our initial base is out of the United Church of Christ, most of our work has been with community organizations. One of the challenges we see, and you might have some clue of this if you looked at the number of applicants that we saw immediately, was that a lot of fundamentalist conservative churches who are applying for low power FM.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly it isn't as if the Christian right doesn't have enough access to airwaves. So one of the challenges that we're trying to do is to counter that by reaching out to as many progressive organizations and community organizations to apply for this. So our foundation certainly initially is from that, but from church. But we see our mission is working with various groups, racial and ethnic groups. Groups who have not had a voice, so that we're seeking for as many progressive community organizations and groups of those who've gone on beforehand. But I think you're accurate that our concern is, I'll speak personally, is that when this when the FCC approve of this, that many of the people who have been advocating for decades, we seem to have been overwhelmed by people coming out of the woodworks, particularly you know, those from conservative background. So the challenge is to see this as an opportunity, and then reach out to many progressive organizations and groups as possible, just to get you know, alternative back into the media. Certainly, we want to encourage people who are interested to seriously consider applying for low power FM. It is an opportunity. It's a community organizing technique. It's not for what we say is that we're not in the radio business, but in community organizing, and this is a way in which you can extend your mission in terms of creating power within your community. The Micro Radio Implementation Project is located in Portland, Oregon, but we certainly work with groups throughout the nation. For those who are interested, we have a toll-free number, and that is 877-468-8884. Our website is www.microradio.org, and you can reach us by email at microradioproject, or one word, at earthlink.net.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, and can also be heard on Micropower 102.9 FM, Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 FM, Free Radio Madison 87.9 FM, Radio Free Cascadia 98.5 FM, and on the web at www.unbrokenchain.net and www.parumpradio.com. You can reach Freak Radio at P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Or send email to frsc@microradio.net. That's frsc@microradio.net. And don't forget, you can always listen to the many great shows on Freak Radio by pointing your browser to www.microradio.net/frsc. Again, that's www.microradio.net/frsc. Our theme music was arranged and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For C-Line and all the programmers at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man. And that's a wrap.